Okay, first off, man, the band sounded awesome this morning. They have crushed it all weekend. I get the honor and privilege of hearing them every weekend, and I could not be more proud of them. And thank you to Pastor David for allowing me to speak today and allowing me to finish off this Jesus Is series. Now, if you remember, a couple weeks ago, Lido kicked off this Jesus Is series, and he looked at this story of Jesus, the Pharisees, and the woman caught in adultery. And I know for a lot of you guys, that was a powerful weekend, because a lot of us were confronted with some of the hurt and pain in our lives. But we were also confronted with a choice whether to forgive that person or to not forgive that person. And for a lot of you, that was a freeing weekend, a weekend where you began the process and journey of forgiving someone in your life. And I know that is not easy. And then last week, Brent talked about these I am statements, and these I am statements that Jesus made. And this isn't just any statement. These I am statements are huge, powerful, theologically packed statements. Ultimately, these are the type of statements that get Jesus killed. Because using this phrase, I am, isn't just an identifier of anyone. No, it was actually, God used it a ton in the Old Testament, most famously with Moses. So God and Moses are talking one day, and God tells Moses, hey, I need you to go to the Egyptians, and I need you to basically tell them, let my people go. And Moses is like, okay, I'll do that, but who do I tell them that they sent me? If they ask, like, who sent you, what do I say? And God responds with, tell them, I am sent you. And just a terribly grammatically incorrect statement. But still, what this means is basically this phrase, I am, roughly translates to always existed. So what he's saying right here is, when they ask who sent you, tell them the one who has always existed sent you. So when Jesus uses this phrase, he knows the weight and the impact of it. He basically says, hey, you remember the God of Moses? You remember the God who created everything? Yeah, that's me. That's who I am. So I want to pick up the story of Jesus one chapter after where Brent left off last week. Now, there's just a whirlwind of activity in Jesus' life right now. He is traveling all over the place. He is teaching everywhere. He is a full-on rock star at this point. If he goes over here, 5,000 people follow. If he goes over here, 10,000 people follow. They are showing up to hear his teachings. They are showing up to have them heal them. But honestly, it's the beginning of the end of Jesus' life. The story we're going to read today, you can read kind of the couple of verses after the story. But basically, the story happens, and a bunch of people get together. The Pharisees, the leaders of the law, the teachers, they all get together and they say, we got to do something about this Jesus guy. He can't keep doing what he's doing. And in that meeting, they decide, okay, we're going to kill him. We're going to kill him. This can't go on. This can't continue. So it's the beginning of the end of Jesus' life. So we are going to be looking at a story in John chapter 11 today. So if you have your Bibles, if you have your phones with the app on it, or if you have the Cross City app, you can go to the Cross City app, and there's a Bible app built right into that, and you can hop in there. If you don't have any of those things, it's not a problem. All of our verses are going to be up on the screen so you guys can follow along today. So let's hop into John chapter 11. Here's what it says. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. So Jesus is told that one of his friends is sick. And this isn't just any friend. This is one of his best friends. Now, we know from a lot of other passages in the Bible that Jesus had 12 disciples. Now, these disciples, they went everywhere Jesus went. They traveled with him. They spent almost every waking moment with that. And in those 12, there was this, what we call the inner three, Peter, James, and John. These were like his closest disciples. He spent so much time. He invested so much time with them. And so those are like kind of the big ones that we know. But then he had this other group of friends, this other inner three, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They didn't follow around him everywhere. He didn't do ministry with them. Yes, they believed who Jesus was. They believed in his power. They believed all these things about him. But they didn't spend every waking
moment with them. They weren't in the thick of ministry every day. This inner three was different. This is the type of inner three that you just sit down and you relax with, and you laugh with, and you just have fun. You simply enjoy their presence. In a word, they were his best friends. So he gets word that one of his best friends are sick. And this isn't just some everyday cold. This isn't, you know, oh, Lazarus is sick now, but he'll be good on the weekend. No, no, no. It got so bad that they felt the need to send word to Jesus. This is the type of sickness they didn't think he was going to recover from. They didn't know if he was going to make it on the other side. Some of you guys have been there before. Some of you have had to make those type of phone calls where you call up someone and you say, I don't think they're going to make it. The doctor says we've only got a couple hours. The doctor says we've only got this weekend. Some of you have received those phone calls. And they say that information to you, whether it's about a family member or a friend, and you're just holding the phone and you're frozen. You don't know what to say. You don't know how to react. You don't know where to go from here. Jesus, we need you to come see Lazarus. We don't know how much time he has left. We need you to come down to the hospital. We're not sure if he's going to recover from this one. It's a dire situation. Jesus receives this message, and I'm not going to lie to you. He responds strangely. It's a weird reaction. This is what it says. When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." So Jesus gets this news that one of his closest friends is sick. "Jesus, we know your power. We've seen what you can do. Please hurry up. Come back. Help us." And he responds with 2 things. He's not going to die. He'll be fine. It's an odd reaction. Like, imagine getting that phone call where it's like, "Eh, the doctor says, you know, they might not make it to the night." And you're like, "Eh, they're good." You know, like, okay, that seems a little insensitive. You know what I mean? Like, maybe, you know, scale that back a little bit. And then he stays exactly where he is for 2 more days. How many of us would instantly drop everything we're doing to go to the hospital? Maybe if it's on the other side of the country, we instantly hop online, we get a plane ticket, and we're gone. We leave work. We leave all of our responsibilities. We go spend every waking moment with that person. I want to spend every time right next to their bedside. I will sit in that chair right next to them because I want to be there. It's not what Jesus does. It seems like there's no urgency with him. He doesn't drop everything and go. Honestly, Jesus seems to be taking his sweet time. Why is he doing this? What's going on here? As weird as it sounds, does he not understand the situation? Does he not understand how truly sick Lazarus is? Does he not get it? Does he not get the weight of the situation? "Jesus, we need you here now. Please come see Lazarus. Hurry up." And he stays exactly where he is for 2 more days. Doesn't seem to be in a rush. Doesn't seem to be concerned. Goes on to say, after he said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but the disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead." Which, gosh, this section makes me happy. "And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe. Let us go to them." Okay, the disciples have no idea what Jesus is talking about right now. Okay, you ever like get one of those, you're like, okay, I'm going to read the Bible right now. You're like, oh man, maybe it's a Saturday morning. You kind of woke up early. You're like, okay, I got my Bible. I got my notepad. I got my pen. I got my coffee. Let's do this. Okay, and you're like, I'm going to read this chapter. I'm going to read this section. And you sit down and you focus. And then you read it. I don't know what that just said.
You know, you're just lost. You're just completely lost. Okay. All right. That was a warm up. Let's do this again. Okay. Read it again. What is Jesus saying, right? What is happening right here? What is going on? He's using words I don't understand. Like, that's what the disciples are going right now. They have no idea what Jesus is saying at this moment. So Jesus decides to make it very clear. He just says, Lazarus is dead. Like, I imagine he says that as slow as possible. Maybe he has, like, sock puppets. You know, he brings out a whiteboard, starts drawing pictures. You know, Lazarus, the guy that walked, he's dead. You know what I mean? He's just, like, trying to basically tell these disciples as plainly as possible, hey, Lazarus, he's dead. He's not sleeping. Apparently, I got to use small words with you, okay? We all have those friends, right? We got to use tiny words. We got to talk really slow. You and I have those friends. Jesus has 12 of them, okay? They're just all morons, all right? They just don't understand what he's saying at this point. Then it goes on. Check out this next line. So it says, then Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. He's a barrel full of sunshine. That's fun, you know? So half of his group are morons, and then the other half are just Eeyore over here, you know, just like, I hope we go die with him. Thanks, Debbie Downer. Like, this is the crew that Jesus is working with right now, all right? They're just like, I hope when we get to town they kill us too. Yay! Thanks, Thomas. You're a lot of help. This is the crew he's working with. Goes on to say, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus has already been in the tomb for 4 days. So we know by most Jewish customs that when a person dies, they bury him that same day. Sometimes there's some extenuating circumstances, but most likely Lazarus has been dead for 4 days at this point. And Jesus finally shows up. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed home. Lord, Martha said, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now, you see this contrast of grief between Mary and Martha. Martha runs out to meet him. She's upset. She's angry. She still can't believe her brother is gone. Jesus, why weren't you here earlier? Why did you take so long to show up? If you had just been here, if you had just shown up when I told you to show up, my brother would still be alive. What's wrong with you? Why did you take your time? Martha is grief-stricken. She's hurting. She's confused. She's frustrated with Jesus. And then you have Mary. Mary stays home. It doesn't tell us a lot about what she's feeling right now, but it's not much of a stretch to imagine she's pretty upset right now, too. Jesus wasn't there. Wasn't there for his last moments alive. Wasn't even there for the funeral. He wasn't there to comfort us. He wasn't there when we were grieving. Imagine what this family is going through right now. A lot of you guys know what this family is going through right now. You've lost a loved one. And maybe you've lost that loved one recently, or maybe it was years ago, but it still feels like yesterday. You can identify what they're going through right now. The pain, the hurt, the frustration, everything that's happening. They're mad. Maybe Lazarus was the breadwinner for his family, too. How are we going to pay the bills? How are we going to keep going? How are we going to keep food on the table? All these emotions are amplified because they're so disappointed with Jesus. They felt like he doesn't care. They felt like he wasn't there when we needed him. How many of us can relate to that? Jesus, you weren't there when I felt like I needed you. We titled this message, Jesus is Life. And there are times in our life, though, that seems really hard to imagine. There are times in our life that we would use a different word in there. You see, I don't think Martha and Mary would use the phrase, Jesus is life, right now. Maybe Jesus is frustrating.
Jesus is confusing. Jesus is apathetic. Or this one, Jesus is silent. I feel like that sometimes. I feel like he isn't there. I feel like he's just silent. And if we're being honest with ourselves, I would imagine you guys probably feel the same way. We see Jesus' life, and I don't know if I resonate with that. I don't know if I connect with that. If you have your notes or if you have it on your app, that first fill-in just says, Jesus is blank. There's no right or wrong answer. We want to challenge you guys. Write what word you would use. Based on your week. Maybe you had a great week. Maybe you had a terrible week. Based on your month, maybe this summer, August, whatever it is, has been great. Maybe it's been awful. Maybe this 2017 has just been so hard for you. Whatever word you would use. Some of you guys would write, Jesus is life. Some of you would write, Jesus is everything. Jesus is the reason I wake up in the morning. Jesus is salvation. For others of you, you would not use anywhere close to that word. You would use some of those other words, frustrating, confusing, and silent. Maybe some of you are sitting there and you're like, man, I don't even know if I believe in this stuff. For me, Jesus is unreal. He's fake. It's between you and God. What would you fill out right there? In this moment, right now, what would you fill out? The opportunity to visit a high school student that's in the hospital this week. 17 years old. He went in. He was, for a couple weeks, he just had some shoulder pain, and just it would come, and then it would go, and sometimes he would wake up, and it would feel great, and then sometimes it would just be so painful. And then his leg just really started hurting, and it would come, and it would go, and he's just like, man, I just think I need to go to the doctor. And so they go to the hospital, they kind of check him in, they do blood work, they do scans, they do all this stuff, and they're like, man, you know, it looks like everything's good. You can kind of go home. You're probably just sore. And he goes, okay, great, awesome. So getting ready to check out, getting all this stuff together, and five doctors walk into his room. And they say, we need you to sit down. There's been a mistake. You have leukemia. 17 years old. About to start his junior year in high school. And it stops the family in their tracks. I've known this student for a couple years now. He's a bright kid. He's incredibly funny. He's, of all things, he's an amazing billiards player. Just a couple weeks ago, he competed in this national competition. They invite everyone under the age of 18 to compete in this competition in Vegas. He finished 9th overall. Like, it's incredible. He's just this phenomenal kid. And so I hear of this news, and I go down to the hospital, and I just sit, and I pray with him, and I encourage him, and I sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and we have just one of those winding conversations, you know, where you just talk about kind of everything under the sun. Obviously, we talk about him being sick. We talk about life. We talk about passing the time. We joke around. We talk about anything that we can think of. But there comes a point in the conversation where I ask him, I'm like, man, how are you feeling about all this? And not just like the physical stuff, because I know at this point he's been on chemo for a couple days, and the chemo is just destroying his body. And I'm like, man, not physically. No. When five doctors walk into your room and say to you, you have leukemia, what goes through your head at that point? He pauses. And he looks at me and says, you know what? I'm at peace with all of it. It's not something I can control. He says, I didn't cause it, but I'm going to get through it. And I'm just sitting there in awe of the perspective of this young man. That is wisdom beyond his years. That is perspective beyond his years. Because how often do you and I, when something bad happens to us, we immediately shake our fist at God? We immediately yell out, God, why aren't you there? Why are you taking your time? Why haven't you shown up yet? What are you doing? This is exactly the point that Martha is at. And in Martha's frustration, in her pain, in her confusion, she has this moment of clarity. She runs out and just starts yelling, God, if you were just here, my brother would still be alive. But there's these two sentences right next to each other, back to back. And she yells out, if you were just here, my brother would still be alive. And you see her starting to be pulled in two different directions. The pain, the frustration, the grief, it's all real. What she's feeling is real. But she also, in this moment, remembers the history she has with Jesus. All the teachings, all the miracles, all the times that she saw Jesus' power. She knows he is God. She knows that he is powerful. She knows that he is in control of everything. And then she says this. But I know that even now, even in the midst of my pain, even in the midst of my suffering, even in the midst of my grief, that God will give you whatever you ask. Not me. No, God will give you, Jesus, whatever you ask. Martha understood something we often don't, that Jesus is able to take a terrible, awful situation and turn it into something incredible. Only Jesus can take this pain and give it purpose. That second fill-in right there says, a delay does not equal a denial. A delay does not equal a denial. Far too often we think that just because Jesus isn't on our timeline, that he is absent. Some of you guys are going through unimaginable challenges right now. Maybe it's something that you fight on a day-to-day basis. And for some of you, maybe you are communicating with God, praying to God every single day. God, please solve this situation. Others of you, you have given up. You're saying, I'm done communicating with God. It seems like he's not there. I'm done talking to you. God, I've been praying for so long and you're not showing up. I've been praying for so long about this cancer. I've been praying for so long about this divorce. God, why aren't you allowing my family to grow? Why aren't you restoring these relationships? Why aren't you healing this sickness? Why aren't you changing my spouse's heart? Why aren't you fixing my parents' marriage? Why aren't you providing me with a job? What are you doing? I have sent word to you. I have prayed to you. And it feels like you don't care. It feels like you're absent. God, what are you doing? Story goes on. It says, Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. And you see Jesus almost saying, no. That's not what I'm talking about. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Here's that I am statement again. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord. She replied, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world. Skip down a couple verses, and he asked, where have you laid him? Come and see, Lord, they replied. The shortest verse in the entire Bible, Jesus wept. I feel like I'm just as guilty as anyone of this, but I often see Jesus almost like this robot, in the sense of like he doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low, like his emotions are just kind of flatlined at all times. And granted, we don't see a ton of emotion from Jesus in the Bible. But imagine this scene that he walks up on. One of his best friends has died. His other best friends are grief-stricken. They are in mourning. They are in so much pain. And he sees this situation, he sees this scene, and he just breaks down and cries. His heart is overwhelmed with emotion and love for these people. Some of the people in the crowd see this, and they start taking little shots at Jesus. It says, then the Jews said, see how he loved them. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man had kept this man from dying? Kick him while he's down. Jesus just decides to let this comment go. He doesn't respond to it because he still cares more about his friends than the terrible things that people are saying about him. And then it goes on to say, Jesus, once more, deeply moved, came to the tomb. So this isn't just like one of these, he cried. You know, like those movie cries where it's like a single tear and it glistens and you know what I mean? Like, no, this is this ugly, nasty cry. Okay, you all know what I'm talking about. Where your eyes are all puffed out, there's snot coming out your nose, you're making weird noises, you know, like, you know, like you're just doing weird stuff. You're like, okay, Jesus, this is gross. Someone get him 4 boxes of Kleenex. This is disgusting. You know what I mean? This is what he's doing. He is completely overwhelmed. This isn't one of those, like, you know, like the very proper, you know, like you have a little bit of water under your eyes. You could just kind of pat it. Good. No. He is breaking down and crying. He is overcome with emotion in this scene. And check out what happens next. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there for 4 days. Jesus, he nasty, okay? Like, let's be real for a second. Homeboy smells. Like, that's gross. Please don't open that door, you know? And then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took the stone away. Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out. His hand and feet were wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. I don't want us to miss this. Doesn't it make Jesus' emotion even more powerful knowing that he knew the end of the story? Think about this. He cried and broke down multiple times right before he raised someone from the dead. He knew the end of the story. He knew what was going to happen. He knew this was going to happen when they sent word to him that Lazarus was sick. He knew this was going to happen the first time he ever met Lazarus. He knew this was going to happen at the creation of the universe. He knew how the story would end, but he still allowed himself to feel the pain and grief and suffering of other people. We often pray, Jesus, hurry up. We want Jesus to be on our timeline. But he says in this moment, I am the resurrection and the life. And yes, this is a loaded statement that has a ton of foreshadowing for ultimately his death and his resurrection. But it goes back to those I am statements. He's basically saying, I am powerful. I am in control of everything. I am the one who has always existed. I am the one that will continue to exist after all of this is gone. Ultimately, Jesus is saying, I have power over every single thing you are worried about right now. I know you're worried about your job. I know you're worried about your marriage. I know you're worried about your kids. I know you're worried about your health. I know you're worried about money. But I have power and control over all of it, everything. And I care what you're going through. That final fill-in says, because Jesus is life, I can have faith in his timeline. We see in the story that Jesus cares so much. He knows the outcome of what's going to happen. He knows the end of the story, but he still allows himself to feel the emotion of everyone around him. He is the creator of the universe, the powerful I am, the one who holds all of this together, the creator of life. He cares about what you're going through. He cares about what I'm going through. He cares about all of it. Think about this from the perspective of Lazarus. Dude has no idea what's happening right now. He was dead, now he's not. He isn't caught up in all this other stuff. He isn't caught up in this timeline stuff. Lazarus is how I wish I was sometimes. He was dead, now he's alive. He was in a tomb, now he's not. He needed to be healed, he got healed. We get caught up in all this other stuff, all this other junk, all this other timeline stuff. And we forget how much God and Christ has done for us. We forget how far Christ has taken us. Our old life is gone. Our new life is here. We focus so much on how much time it took Jesus to get to the tomb more than what actually happened at the tomb. We focus on the past hurt and the past pain more than the new life that we can experience in Christ. God wants something different for you. He wants a new life for you. But I can tell you this, it's not going to be on the same timeline as you want. It just won't be. But Jesus is life, and he wants the best life for you. Because of that, we have to trust in his timeline. But I know that's so difficult. That's so challenging. Think about what Mary and Martha are going through in those 4 days of silence, those 4 days of crying out to Jesus, and he's nowhere to be found. They don't know what's going to happen at the end of the story. All they know is the silence in front of them. God knows what's going to happen at the end of the story, and he still cares. He knows all this is going to work out. He knows that he holds every one of our lives in the palm of his hand. But he still cares for you, and he still cares for me. He wants to walk through this life with each and every one of us. But ultimately, we have to say, God, I will trust you. I will trust that you have this under control. I will trust in your timeline. I will trust in the timeline of the job I don't like. I will trust in your timeline for my spouse or my child coming to salvation. I will trust you with my mental health, even though it feels like it's getting worse by the day. God, I will trust you in every single situation. I will trust you when it feels like you're silent. I will trust you when it feels like you're apathetic. I will trust you when it feels like you're frustrating. Because God, I know that you are the powerful I am. It says in the book of Romans that God's plan for you is three things: good, pleasing, and perfect. It says nothing about being quick. It says nothing about being on your timeline. But he says, my plan for your life is good, pleasing, and perfect. Trust in that plan. Trust in this life that I have prepared for you. Trust in everything. Why? Because I am the one who has always existed. And I am the one who will exist after all of this is gone. We're going to go into a song of response right now. Worship team's going to lead another song. We're going to have pastors and leaders up here, and here's what I want to challenge you with. For some of you guys, you are just at your rope's end. God, I've been praying for this for so long. I've been praying about this for months, for years. And God, I'm just so tired. If that's you, come up and pray with one of our pastors. We want to walk through this with you. For others of you, maybe you're just like, man, I've been stuck in this old life for so long, I don't want it anymore. I've been stuck in this tomb for so long anymore, I don't want it anymore, God. I don't want this old life. I want this new life that you have promised. Because I trust that you have control over everything, and that's what I want, God. Some of you guys are just going through unimaginable pain right now. That's you. Come forward and allow our pastors to pray for you and encourage you. Because Jesus is life, we can trust in his timeline. We can trust in his plan. Let's stand and sing.